This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, we'll get an update on the Clifton Deer Program, an effort to reduce the deer population through sterilization. And as Chief Marketing Officer, the new path to the CEO's office. First up, according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, there are about 1.5 million deer-related car crashes every year in the U.S., resulting in close to $1 billion in vehicle damage. While October, November, and December are the worst months for collisions involving deer, they can happen at any time during the year. And joining us with advice on how to avoid a run-in with a deer and what to do if it should happen to you, Mike Belcour, Driving School Manager for AAA Cincinnati. You can join the conversation this afternoon at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Mike, good to see you today. Thanks for being here.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so what are the numbers on deer crashes in Ohio and in the Cincinnati area? How much of a problem is this?
So thinking about Ohio-based, in 2015, there were 10,000 crashes in Ohio alone.
That were deer-related?
That were deer-related.
Wow.
And in the Cincinnati area, almost 800. So you had almost a tenth of those just in our immediate area here in Cincinnati. So it is a problem, and it's something drivers need to be aware of.
Now, what are the worst counties in the state for this?
It's around here, the biggest one was Hamilton County, but you think about the rural areas of the area. So you're looking at the place you get out, Claremont County, Adams County. We're getting into the more rural, more farmland, more stuff like that, where the deer can find food. That's when you're going to see them more and more on the road. Now, here in Cincinnati, what they run into and why you see them on the road so much is they're hunting for that food, right? And they don't have any place really to go. They have to be in the areas where the automobiles are.
Now, these are 2015 numbers,
yes.
I take it. When will the numbers for 2016 be out?
Probably sometime in the next few months. It's okay. Usually after about the first quarter.
Okay.
While they're with the big season being, like you said, October, November, December, it's compiling all that data and getting it out.
Yeah. But even though we talk about October, November, and December being the big years, I mean, people should still be on the alert. I mean, these can happen any time of year.
Yeah, absolutely. The reason October, November, December are the big ones, that's when they're running. So that's when they're a little more active and everything. But all year round, they're hunting for the food and moving around. So it's a problem all year. Big focus fourth quarter, but all year round.
Mm-hmm. Do we have an idea if these 2016 numbers are going to be up, down, or?
If it follows the trend, we were up about 7% from 14 to 15. So if it follows that trend, we could probably expect another sharp increase.
Now, how much damage for somebody who's never experienced this and hasn't seen it firsthand, how much damage do these collisions cause?
It really depends. Like I've had one walk into the side of my car. I had slowed down, and the deer actually just walked into the side of my car.
It was inevitable. You were going to get hit no matter what.
No damage done.
Uh-huh.
Hit my car and bounced off. Where I've seen them where you hit them head on, they come through the windshield, and it totals a car. So it really can go from being little to no damage, depending on how you hit them, to being catastrophic.
So in catastrophic, yeah, there have been deaths connected
absolutely.
With these collisions, haven't
yep.
there?
Absolutely.
Yeah. How many deaths as a result of deer car collisions?
Yeah. There were 900 injuries and 4 deaths in Ohio in 2015. That's the 2015. So you don't necessarily get lots of injuries, obviously, but not as many deaths. But it's more, there's, like you said, thousands upon thousands of dollars of damage caused to the car and medical like that.
Yeah, it's a large animal that you're running to. They weigh, about several hundred pounds usually, and especially the males are
big.
Very
bucks
big.
Bucks can be a couple hundred pounds easy.
Yeah. So these accidents can happen pretty quickly, can't they? And they can catch you off guard and by surprise. I mean, it was interesting what you were saying about you had one walk into your car that night.
Yep. Yeah, and in that case, they were standing on the side of the road, and I saw them, and I slow way down, and I kind of inched past them. And when the headlights got past them, the one started to cross the road. But the thing with deer is unpredictability. You could be driving down a road, and one comes out of the woods, and blink of an eye, you're on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't see him running, didn't see him coming. So it's where instinct takes over at that point.
Yeah. Do deer whistles work, by the way? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I have never tried them. I am more believing in I'm going to rely on my action. I don't know that let's put it this way, probably can't hurt. Anything can help if it grabs their attention.
Okay. But, you know, and supposedly these make a whistling noise that only the deer can pick up on, and it's supposed to startle them. My wife had a set on her car, and it didn't keep her from her first collision. So I'm always just curious how effective they really are and whether they've ever really been proven or not.
Yeah, and I've never seen a study where it says, gives you a good percentage that they really are 100% effective.
So what kind of preventive steps can you take, Mike? What kind of things should you do?
Well, as you're driving, the first thing is stay alert. You know, we talk about it all the time, the distracted driving and everything. But, you know, there's so much going on. And when you're in areas, especially the more wooded areas and stuff where deer can be prevalent, stay awake, be aware, and be on the lookout. Be using a good search pattern. Not only look for cars and people around you, but also animals. And then just slow down. You know, we're a society that likes to get everywhere in a hurry. You know, slow down because you don't want to have that catastrophic accident. Those would be the two preventative kind of actions you can take in a car. Slow down, put the phone away, be aware of your surroundings, and be attentive while you drive.
Pay attention. And I think also time of day that you drive, if you can adjust the time of day that you drive, aren't they more active usually early in the morning and then later in the evening?
Yep. Dawn is a bad time for them at dusk. Those are their big feeding times. So, and they're more of a, believe it or not, a nocturnal type animal. So the evening hours and the early morning are the busy ones. So if you can wait that extra hour in the morning before you get moving, half hour, it decreases your chances a lot. Or if you get off the road during that time in the evening as well.
So should you try to miss the deer, Mike? Is that a good idea? Should you try to avoid hitting it?
That would be the biggest misconception that's out there when you're driving, is you don't want to swerve. You want to hit your brakes hard and stay straight at the deer. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One, if you swerve, you're doing one of two things. You're either crossing the middle lane, and that can be even more catastrophic than hitting the deer, or going off the road, which could include going in a ditch, hitting any trees or telephone poles or anything that's on the side of the road, or cause you to lose control there. Plus, the other thing is the deer's unpredictable. You don't know which way it's going to move when it gets started. So you could swerve, and that's the way it decides to go. So instead, if you keep it straight and he decides to go either way, you have a better chance of missing him if you're instead of playing that 50-50 chance of, is he going to go left or right?
Yeah. And I've heard, too, swerving can be catastrophic. I've heard cases where people have crossed the median,
yep,
swerving and hit another car head on. So that just makes things even worse.
Absolutely.
What about honking? Is honking a good idea?
I recommend it. Anything like kind of you were saying about the deer whistle, anything to grab their attention.
513-419-7100 if you would like to join us. And let's talk to John in Milford. Hi, John. Go right ahead.
All right. The question is, given the fact that now we're looking at an era where there may be tons of driverless cars, and since your guest mentioned, which I also agree with, that you have to rely on your instincts and quick reactions, and that sometimes you can only see these coming in a split second, what's this driverless car industry supposed to do with deer? Because I've missed probably 6 or 10 accidents over the years, most of them with deer, but a couple of times out west with elk and moose. So what about driverless cars? Are we going to have tons of wrecks?
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting question.
Yeah, I know the driverless cars, they're the technology that's going into them, and you're starting to see it in some cars. It's not 100% effective yet, but it is coming. It's the self-braking, and there are some cars out there that are putting on for lack of a better word, radar type,
yeah,
type things that actually pick up movement and everything and scan in front of your car that do pick up deer, and it'll automatically break for you. But that's a brave new world and probably a topic that we could talk for hours on, these autonomous cars.
And it's interesting you brought that up about the radar, whatever we would call it. At the Detroit Auto Show, Volvo had a display where they were promoting this system that they had, this onboard system, which to me essentially was radar that could detect people and large animals like deer or moose that were in the road ahead of you. And I guess the automakers are catching on to this. They're starting to become more aware that this is a problem. And they're trying to address it.
Yep. And it all, going back to what he said, it's all going back. All this technology that they're putting on cars now is all getting test run and built and made better for when we do actually get to the autonomous car.
So what if you do hit a deer? What if you're unfortunate enough that you try everything? You jam on the brakes, you honk, you flash your headlights, whatever you can to try to avoid the collision. What if you do end up hitting it, Mike? What are steps you should take at that point?
You know, if at that point you hit a deer, the first thing is get safe. Get off the road like any other accident. If it's with another driver or another car, get off the road, put your flashers on, make sure you're safe. Call 911. You want to call and let them know. I mean, this animal could be in the middle of the road causing a hazard that authorities need to clean it up. Your car could be messed up. Call for help, because you're probably going to be pretty rattled too. So you want to make sure you call for help and then just stay safe. The big thing, turn on your flashers just like you would if you were in a car accident with another driver, and do all those steps apply to deer, except obviously you're not getting any information from the deer.
Right, and that brings up another question. Should you even go near the deer?
No, they're a wild animal, right? So you don't know if they're alive, dead, or anything like that. So better to wait for the authorities to get there to decide if the deer's safe to be around and things like that.
Mike, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Not a problem.
Mike Belcour, he's driving school manager for AAA Cincinnati. This is year two for a pilot program in Cincinnati to reduce the number of deer. And here to give us an update on the Clifton Deer Program are Lori Briggs, one of the founders of Clifton Deer, and Vicky DiNicola, Vice President and Operations Manager of White Buffalo Incorporated, a contractor for the program. You can be part of our discussion at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Lori and Vicky, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Lori, give us some background about Clifton Deer and why this program was started in the first place.
Right. Well, thanks, Mark. We started as a citizen-initiated collaboration with the Cincinnati Park Board. The Park Board has the tough job of keeping our parks healthy and in an eco-sustainable situation, not only for our current generation, but for generations to come. And deer overpopulation is a problem with that. And so they've had for about a decade a bow hunting program. They were talking about bringing bow hunting to the Clifton area parks. And there were a number of residents who thought that it wasn't necessarily an appropriate setting for bow hunting because it's a very urban area. We collaborated with the park to come up with a non-lethal solution and got approval from the park board and from the state Division of Wildlife. And as you said, we're in year two, so things are going well.
You know, it's kind of surprising to hear that deer can be a problem even in an urban setting. I mean, how big a problem are they?
Well, you know, it depends on, obviously, the level of overpopulation. Varies from community to community, but we have in about the 1 square mile of our program, we found in the first year that there were about 100 deer in that square mile. And it's obviously a pretty built up, there's not a whole lot of land. So that is, I think, by most standards would be considered overpopulation.
What are the boundaries of that one square mile area that we're talking about?
It is I-75, Clifton Avenue, and Ludlow Avenue. So it's basically Gaslight section of Clifton.
Vicky, tell us about the process. How does this work?
Well, we started working with Lori, and they did a lot of the initial proposal writing, got the permit, and then we show up each year. Basically, Lori's been out setting up and looking at the deer that are in the area, setting up bait sites, and then we're basically there for 3 or 4 nights capturing animals and bringing them to a surgical facility. And a local veterinarian is conducting the ovariectomies, and then we put them back out into the field and recover them. And then we've done work this year to estimate the population again.
So ovariectomy, what exactly is that, Vicki?
We're removing the ovaries.
Okay, and how does that compare to, say, sterilizing a domestic animal, a dog or a cat?
So typically when you take your dog or cat into the spade, they're basically removing the entire uterus. So it's more like not a hysterectomy, but you're removing the ovaries and the uterus.
So it's fair to say this is
just removing the ovaries.
This is less invasive than, I take it.
Yeah, it's less invasive. I mean, it's still an open abdominal surgery. There's a very small incision that's typically about 4 inches on the abdomen.
So how many deer have been sterilized so far?
Year one, we handled 36 animals, and this year we handled 10.
I think year one it was 41, and this year 10.
Okay, so fewer this year. What were some of the obstacles as far as doing this, Lori, that you came across?
Well, the interesting thing is we are trying to cooperate with Mother Nature, but it doesn't always cooperate with us.
Mother Nature can be very unpredictable, yes.
Yes, yes. So our big obstacle this year was acorns, which I never thought about acorns before, but acorns are a favorite food of deer. And as Vicki said, we set up bait stations for the capture specialists, the darters, to come in and dart the deer. And we put corn there. And the deer this year were not very interested in our corn because they had this bumper crop of acorns. So we kind of regrouped. We were going to do this in late November, early December. We regrouped and said, we've got to wait for them to go through all the acorns so they're actually hungry and will eat corn, and pushed it back, you know, by a couple of weeks into January. Then they were a little more hungry and a little more cooperative and coming to our bait stations. So, you know, and the other obstacle is weather. You know, it's been a very rainy, mild winter. So we ended up with some soggy volunteers this year, but in the end, it all worked out.
Mm-hmm. How much does it cost to do this, Lori?
You know, the cost is there's a lot of upfront cost. We've spent between the 2 years so far about $60,000. It's all privately raised donor money, not city money. But we were really pleased because our cost was about cut in half between year one and year two. And over time, we hope to reduce our costs even further for a couple of reasons. First of all, you only have to sterilize each doe once, so you are going to be handling fewer and fewer animals each year. The other thing is that we are working to train local people who will do some of the professional functions for free. For example, White Buffalo started trying to train a retired police officer this year in the darting function, and he's willing to volunteer his time. So we hope that over the next couple of years, as we get local people trained to take over some of these functions, our costs will really become very manageable.
Mm-hmm. Vicki, how smoothly does it go to do this? I mean, do you encounter any problems like a deer getting hurt or anything in the whole process, or does it run pretty smoothly most of the time?
Most of the time it runs pretty smoothly. There's a lot that can go wrong that we protect against, so we have to be very focused when we're in the field, but we didn't have any issues this year.
Yeah, how many places in the country is this type of program in place?
We're in 9 different sites right now.
So what are
each of them has their own unique you know, sort of unique setting.
So you've got some places that are urban, some places, I guess, might be rural, suburban, different. So that's what you mean by different settings?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have some that have hunting in nearby areas, you know, some that are more urban than others, some that are in closed office campuses. And so really we're looking to understand the impact of severely reducing fertility on a deer population and what happens with immigration, where we see permanent immigration that replaces the animals that do die, what happens with dispersal, you know, animals that leave the area, you know, and looking at that in different settings.
Yeah, a question for each of you. Do you think that sterilization alone is going to be enough to reduce deer overpopulation in the Cincinnati area in particular? Do you think it's going to be the sole effective method?
I'll start. I think that that there is no one size fits all solution for every community. We are still in early days of this project, but it looks so far, and Vicki can speak to this, like we are seeing some effect in reduction, you know, even though we've only been in the field, just finished our second season. But there may be areas where this doesn't work or where the community would prefer hunting. I think that this provides another tool in the toolbox for communities and the park board, and each community in conjunction with the regulators needs to decide what they want, whether they prefer hunting, whether hunting is going to be effective, whether they prefer this approach, whether this is going to be effective.
Mm-hmm. Vicki, did you want to weigh in?
Yep. No, Lori is absolutely right. You know, so there are areas where this simply can't and won't work. We need a road network. We need deer that are accessible to be able to dart them. And there are areas where housing is too densely populated and people simply won't be comfortable with hunters or culling or, you know, so there's sort of physical limitations to any of the methods. And then there are also sort of the human factors issues to consider. What does the community want? You know, so I think exactly as Lori said, this is another tool in the toolkit potentially. Mm-hmm.
You know, if I can just add on to that, this goes to both the kind of cost issue and the whether this makes sense for community. One of the things we really like about this for Clifton is that in areas where there is bow hunting, the parks for public safety reasons have to close areas of the park for sometimes extended periods of time to give access to the hunters and not potentially harm humans out walking their dogs or hiking. And we've been able to keep the Clifton area parks, which are heavily utilized by the community, open. So that's just another, you know, factor for communities to consider in terms of what works for their community.
Now, what's the overall goal for Clifton Deer? What are you trying? How much production are you trying to achieve?
Well, we want to get the population down to an eco-sustainable level. And what does that mean? That means a level that will allow forest regrowth in Rawson Woods and Edgewood Grove and Mount Storm Park, a level that that the community, you know, sort of has social acceptance for. People get upset about deer eating their hostas and things like that. So I don't know exactly what that number is, but our goal is to get it down to where we and the park board can look at it and say, yeah, this is eco-sustainable and that the community is comfortable with. We know that the 100 we started with was too many. Hopefully, we'll see first stabilization, and Vicki can talk to this, but stabilization means that mortalities exceed births and immigration. And then most communities are going to see a 10 or 20% reduction, you know, so gradual reduction over time when you get up to a high level of the does not giving birth.
Okay. Vicki?
And that is actually what we're seeing in the numbers. I've spent the last few days crunching some camera trap data that has come back from the field that Lori's been really instrumental in providing, the number of fawns per doe dropped from 0.74 to 0.10. You know, and then we've lost a few animals to mortalities or dispersal, and we've seen very limited immigration. And so we're looking at roughly a 10 to 15% decline over last year.
So how much longer? Go ahead, Vicki.
Nope, go ahead.
All finished. How much longer will the program be running?
Well, our arrangement with the Park Board, the collaboration is a 5-year pilot program. So, and we have a 3-year permit from the state wildlife division. They don't give permits for longer than 3 years. So even though it's a 5-year pilot program, they give us a 3-year permit. So in 2018, we'll be going back asking for renewal of that. So we're hoping it goes at least 5 years. And, you know, we're eager to see the results. And I know the Park Board is looking to look at the results to see whether it makes sense to continue it after that.
So when's the next round of sterilizations? When's that going to happen again?
It would be either this coming December or, you know, depending on, again, Mother Nature and acorns and
whether all those things cooperate or not.
Exactly.
We watch the trees.
So are you pretty optimistic this is going to have a good effect, though, Lori?
We're really pleased. As Vicki said, you know, we're already seeing, not only stabilization, but a 10 to 15% reduction after 1 year. You know, we think that's remarkably good news. You know, we are wanting to be very evidence-based, so we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. You know, the numbers will be what the numbers are, but we're really optimistic, and we're thrilled with the level of community support, both, you know, donors and volunteers. So it is it's kind of a labor of love for those of us who founded it, and we're cautiously optimistic.
How important are the volunteers to this whole thing?
Oh, you know, they're really crucial. I should say that we would be absolutely nowhere without White Buffalo. Vicki and Tony DiNicola and their team are remarkable professionals, and so all the volunteers in the world wouldn't make up for that. But there are so many things that volunteers handle, tending the bait stations, making meals for the team. We have volunteers who actually put the sedated deer on stretchers and carry them from the field, you know, in the dark, in the woods, in the cold, you know, back to the surgical center, and then back again. We even had volunteers who walked Vicki and Tony's little dog who travels with them. So, you know, it's been wonderful, the level of volunteer support. We have a lot of UC students who are very excited about this program, and it's been great to have that sort of youth component of our program.
The youthful energy always helps.
Exactly, especially 3 o'clock in the morning. It really helps.
So I take it you're always looking for help on this project.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Okay. What's the website for your organization?
It's cliftondeer.org.
Okay, and we have a link to that at wvxu.org as well. And Lori and Vicki, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Lori Briggs, one of the founders of cliftondeer.org, and Vicki DiNicola, vice president and operations manager of White Buffalo Incorporated. Coming up, the new path to corporate leadership may be through the marketing division. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.